This is the antipolygraph.org podcast, recorded 22 September 2018, Episode 1, Polygraphs and the Kavanaugh Nomination. I'm your host, George Mashke. Polygraphy has been in the news a lot this week in connection with allegations made by Professor Christine Blasey Ford against Judge Brett Kavanaugh, whom President Trump has nominated to the United States Supreme Court. In a nutshell, Blasey Ford alleges that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted her when he was 17 and she was 15 at a party where alcohol was involved. Now, Blasey Ford made her allegations through her lawyer, Deborah Katz, who had her take a polygraph test that was conducted by a retired FBI special agent named Jerry Hanafin. And the polygraph results have been used to bolster her credibility. Now, what we've seen is those who support Blasey Ford's credibility and who oppose Judge Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court latching on to the polygraph results to support that position, while supporters of Judge Kavanaugh have tended to criticize the polygraph, not always for the right reasons. For example, on Fox News, such critiques have been made that, well, a sociopath or psychopath could beat the polygraph. Of course, the problems with the polygraph go well beyond that. And in my opinion, it was a mistake for Blasey Ford's lawyer, Deborah Katz, to advise her to take a polygraph at all, because the allegations she's making are very serious, and if true, I think would be cause to reject Judge Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court. But introducing such pseudoscientific nonsense as lie detector tests or polygraph test results really only brings a carnival atmosphere to a serious situation. Regardless of your political point of view, whether you support the nomination or not, you should understand that under any circumstances, polygraph test results should have no place in any Senate confirmation hearing, or indeed in any public discourse or any matter where getting to the truth is important. Polygraphy was invented not by scientists, but by interrogators from the 1930s, especially till the 1960s. The techniques were developed by Leonard Keeler, John Reed, and Cleve Baxter, the latter of whom eventually came to believe that plants can read human thought. And these individuals had little understanding of the scientific method, but what they did find was that the polygraph was useful as an aid to interrogation. For that is, if the person you're testing believes that the lie detector can read their mind, then they're more likely to be forthcoming, to tell the truth, fearing that any lie will be detected. But here's the problem. The technique doesn't have any scientific basis. It has an inherent bias against the truthful, while liars can easily beat it. And you don't have to be a psychopath or sociopath or somehow believe your own lies. The techniques for beating the polygraph are quite simple. I won't get into them now, but you'll find them described in our book, The Lie Behind the Lie Detector, which, like all information on antipolygraph.org, is free. So one of the sadder things that we've seen this week is calls for Judge Kavanaugh to also take a lie detector test. And such calls have come from House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and from Representative Elijah Cummings, who asked if Judge Kavanaugh would take a lie detector test. If Judge Kavanaugh were to take a lie detector test, which would be a big mistake, it wouldn't bring any resolution. So what happens if he takes the polygraph? And if he takes one through his lawyer, he's sure to pass it, because when you take a polygraph through a lawyer, as Professor Blasey Ford did, the only outcome that will ever be made public is that the client passed. So we would have dueling polygraphs, which would both be of equal evidentiary value, which is none whatsoever. It's just a joke that debases the public discourse. So polygraphs should have no role whatsoever in determining who's telling the truth in this situation, or indeed in any situation. The controversy over Professor Christine Blasey Ford's polygraph examination has inspired reporting on the general reliability of polygraphy, and I'm happy to say it's all negative. That is, the reporters are getting it right on polygraphs. Eleanor Cummins writes for Popular Science, "Polygraph tests don't work as lie detectors, and they never have. It's time to stop pinning our hopes on pseudoscience." Alice B. Lloyd writes for the Weekly Standard, "Why do we still believe in polygraphs?" And Claire Belinsky writes for City Journal, "The truth about polygraph tests. They're junk science, inadmissible in court, and about as reliable as a pack of tarot cards." You'll find links to all three of these articles in the show notes. Also in the news this month was a proposal that lie detectors be used to identify the author of an anonymous op-ed published in the New York Times that was highly critical of President Donald Trump. The author is reportedly a senior White House advisor. This idea appears to have been suggested by Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, not by anyone in the White House, and there's no indication at this time that it's going anywhere. If it does, we'll keep you informed. Also of note, the Lions of Liberty podcast conducted an hour-long interview with our friend, polygraph critic Doug Williams, whom the U.S. government went after for teaching people how to pass polygraph tests. It's a fascinating interview. I learned new things, and I encourage you to listen to it. We'll provide a link in the show notes. Finally of note, this past week marked the 18th anniversary of antipolygraph.org's presence online. We went online for the first time on the 18th of September, 2000, and I thought now would be a fitting time to talk a little bit about the history of the website. Gino Scalabrini, my co-founder, and I got to know each other through a website called nopolygraph.com that was started in the late 1990s, and that was the center of criticism of polygraphy in the late 90s. And we got the idea of putting together a book about polygraphy that would share all the information we've learned about its scientific shortcomings, as well as things that people who are telling the truth can do to protect themselves against the polygraph, into a ebook that we would publicly distribute to everyone for free. So antipolygraph.org came out of that, originally as a platform for distributing our book, which we titled The Lie Behind the Lie Detector. It's now in its fourth edition, which came out 13 years ago in 2005. We're working now on the fifth edition, and our target is to have it published by Thanksgiving Day of 2018. But rather than keep you in suspense, we'll tell you now what's going to be new in it. The key changes are going to be that we now advise anyone who's interested in a job with a federal agency that requires a polygraph not to do it. We used to limit that advice to the FBI because of the high cost associated with a false positive outcome, which is a very common occurrence. When you fail the polygraph with the FBI, you get blackballed for life from the FBI, and it makes it harder for you to get employment with other federal agencies as well, particularly any agencies that require polygraph screening. But even those that don't, it's a black mark that could be a hurdle to your employment. Well, that's the case actually with all federal agencies that require polygraph screening, such as U.S. Customs and Border Protection, which has a pre-employment polygraph failure rate on the order of 70%, with the CIA, with the NSA, all of these agencies, any agency you take a polygraph with, that information is going to be shared with other federal agencies and become an obstacle to hiring. It's a risk not worth taking, and our advice, if you want to seek a career in public service, do it with an agency that doesn't rely on such pseudoscientific nonsense as polygraph screening. Another suggestion we're making for those who disregard this advice and do go ahead with a polygraph, or maybe they're not applying with a federal agency but with a local law enforcement agency, and if you are subjected to a post-test interrogation, we don't recommend that you make any throwaway admission to placate the polygrapher. Virtually anything that you might say can in some way be spun into a damaging admission. It's best to make no post-test admissions whatsoever. Now, let me move on to a little bit what else is new on antipolygraph.org. This recently, earlier this month, I also closed our chat room. That was a place where anyone could sign on and have a live text chat with anyone else who was on the site at the same time. The reason I removed it is because the software we were running called Ajax Chat was dependent on Flash from Adobe, which is an old technology that isn't being supported anymore in major browsers such as Firefox and Chrome. So it was time to retire the chat room. If you have any ideas for alternative software, we'd be delighted to hear it. And next, I'd like to briefly talk about the idea of this podcast. This is our first episode after 18 years. Why do this now? Well, I've been listening to podcasts for years and enjoyed them, and I thought that creating a podcast for antipolygraph.org would be a more personal and perhaps a more engaging way of interfacing with some of our visitors. So one of the things that I have in mind for the future is to do interviews with knowledgeable people on relevant topics as they arise, or just to discuss polygraph in the news when and as the situation arises. So at this point, we're not looking at a weekly or monthly schedule, but an as-warranted schedule. We won't be making podcasts just to fill time. And as with the website, we're committed to keeping the podcast advertising-free. We're not doing this for money, but for the public interest. And in closing, I would just mention that we very much welcome feedback. And in order to get in touch with us, there are a number of ways you can do it. First, perhaps the easiest is through our email address, and that is antipolygraph.org@protonmail.com. Again, that's antipolygraph.org@protonmail.com. If you would like to contact us anonymously, which polygraphy being a sensitive topic in many instances, you can. And perhaps the easiest way, again, would be to open up your own ProtonMail account. ProtonMail is based in Switzerland. It's not subject to U.S. national security letters. And it has the added advantage that all information on their service is kept in encrypted format. So even if they were somehow subpoenaed to provide records on a customer, all they could provide is encrypted data. And to our knowledge, they haven't received any such subpoenas to date. So again, that's protonmail.com. We're big fans. Alternatively, if you're not concerned so much about anonymity, our phone number is area code 202-810-2105. Again, that's area code 202-810-2105. Now, this number is also connected to our Signal Private Messenger account. That's a free open source secure app that you can use to contact to encrypt your communications with us. And also, Signal keeps no logs of the calls or contacts made by Signal users. And that number is also connected to a WhatsApp account. If you use WhatsApp, you can use that to contact us, as well as Google Allo and Google Duo. And we also have a Telegram account, though we really prefer Signal, which is the best in class for secure online communications. And one other way you can get in touch with us is through a app called Wire. If you don't want us to know your phone number, that's okay too. Go to wire.com, set up an account, and you don't have to use a phone number in association with that. And you don't have to provide us your email address. Our Wire account, if you set up a Wire account, add as a contact at @ap_org. That's at @ap_org. In addition, you can follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is similarly at @ap_org. Again, at @ap_org. And our DMs are open. Until next time, I'm your host, George Meschke.